Welcome to the Euro Auto Training Garage Spiel Podcast. Garage Spiel Podcasts are brought to you by your friends at Baum Tools Unlimited and Stallwillie Tools North America. Learn more at www.baumtools.com and www.stallwillie.com. Baum Tools Unlimited and Stallwillie Tools North America are proud to underwrite the Garage Spiel Podcasts. This is part 8 of our 8-part interview with Dennis Simonitis, Road and Track Magazine's engineering editor. In this episode, Dennis talks about alternative sources of power and renewable energy and considers the future relationship between the automakers and consumers.
There are other alternative power sources, obviously things like wind and solar, geothermal. Mm-hmm. That's another box I can stand on at the risk of hurting myself. The people who preach renewable today are setting themselves up for disappointment. And when you really look at the numbers, I looked this up because I thought you might ask about it. In the United States today, about 4% of our electrical energy is generated by renewable sources.
4%.
Only 4%. Mm-hmm. And another interesting factoid along those regards is California, not necessarily other places, but California looks at renewable in a slightly more modern or environmental way. California does not include big hydro in renewable. So stuff like this produced at Bonneville Dam,
right?
That's not counted among a renewable. Renewable is solar, wind, geothermal, using waste material, cogeneration.
Yeah.
I think those are the four.
Is it because for California, water's never been a given?
Partly that, and yeah. Partly because, I mean, what's beneath, what is the sociological or the societal advantage of renewable? It's that it doesn't screw up the environment as much, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, hey, have you been to Bonneville recently? This is a big, big bit of concrete that creates its own lake where there were never lakes before.
Right, sure.
This is not exactly your idea of a completely environmental thing. So for that reason, there are those who argue that renewable should not include large hydro.
Large hydro.
And they define it in terms of how many megawatts or gigawatts of power it produces. So they don't mind these like little turbines that are stuck in streams. That's great. That's fine.
Yeah.
But they do not allow, consider, the Northwest's idea of hydroelectric power.
Right. Yeah.
That does not. In any case, so we're only 4%, and to think that we're going to be, pick a number, any number, 20%.
Yeah.
In 10 years.
Ridiculous.
Puff and smoke.
Yeah.
Whoops. Can't puff smoke. That's bad for the environment. and the funny part is the Europeans, for example. I thought, Europeans are better. They have big wind farms and all that. Yes and no. It turns out Europe is, I think I have it written down someplace, I think it's 5% overall. There are some countries that are really into it, but I need to dig further to find out whether they include heavy hydro. The Scandinavian countries.
Norway, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah, Norway's big into it.
Yeah, but I wonder how much they include heavy hydro, large hydro.
Sure.
I know that Denmark is big in wind.
Yep. Yeah.
And as I recall, Germany is big in renewable, and they do not include large hydro. So, those are places that are big. But then there are other countries. It turns out the Netherlands is like 3% renewable.
Yep.
Again, partly because I guess, they're not going to be able to use hydro because water doesn't flow up.
Right, sure.
And apparently along the North Sea, they don't have enough wind to generate it. Or why they don't use wind, I don't know.
That's interesting.
Maybe they don't have. But the Netherlands, as I recall, is a relatively small renewable. Let me see. There's some other numbers I had that are kind of fun. For us, 45% of our electricity comes from coal.
45?
Yeah.
Okay.
This comes from the DOE. I mean, this is sounds like a pretty good number. and from the National Renewable Energy Lab data. So it's, I think it's a good number. 45% coal, 23% natural gas, 20 nuclear, large hydro around 7, and then, as I said, 4% when you include wind, biomass cogeneration, geothermal, solar. That's it. Those are the four. Turns out California is big in geothermal.
Didn't know.
Yeah, I didn't know that until I dug into it a little bit. We have some places up north that, and some places out in the desert that produce geothermal.
So do you think that my grandchildren, my great-grandchildren are going to be in a situation where they're, they've got a few different vehicles for specific uses as opposed to the way we've grown up where my gasoline burning car is the thing that I drive.
Yeah.
Right? But you're talking about very specific uses.
Little electric car.
Little electric car for this. You think that's likely?
Well, there was another thing that someone told me when I did that Wither the Automobile. They said, you know what's interesting? They won't necessarily own them. And this, you know, I mean, think partly Zipcar and things we have already.
Sure. Yeah, yeah.
But think also, do a rethinking of the relationship between the automobile maker and the user.
Yep.
Rather than buying a car, you'll buy a deal with Mercedes where it'll provide you with an electric car for most of your driving around town, for your, you know, the everyday stuff.
Yep.
By the way, you're not going to commute anymore. Forget that. Commuting is, we're going to do it electronically. I mean, after all, we don't produce things anymore. We produce information.
Okay.
So commuting will be a thing of the past by 2050. On the other hand, people still like to get around. People still like, we're nomadic. That's who we are.
Yeah.
And you'll still be taking your kids to ballet class and soccer and whatever else. So people will still be getting around. But for that, for those travels, man, you can't beat an electric car. Just can't beat it. Now, along comes the weekend and you want to go visit Granny and she lives 80 miles away or 100 miles away. And you're taking a long weekend and lots of stuff. Okay, you will have already made a deal with your company that for 70% of the time you'll be an electric car owner. For 30% of the time, you'll have your choice of either their fuel cell minivan, maybe for 25% of the time, and maybe for 5% of the time you'll have their IC engine sports car. and this will be part of the deal. This is how you buy into the lease.
Uh-huh.
And so when it comes time to visit grandma, you'll take the electric car to the deal. It's your electric car. It's the same one you'll get back when you're done.
Yeah.
And in the meantime, they'll do the service on it and all that stuff. They'll give you the fuel cell car and you'll go off to visit granny. And then when you come back, you bring it back and you drop it off. And by that time, your electric car has been spiffed up and has its service and so on. And you'll drive your electric car. And maybe the next weekend, you know, you're going to go out and do some track time. Okay. Okay, you drive in and, you know. So the whole idea of the relationship between the user and the supplier, the automaker,
will
differ. And there are some people who are already thinking of that as a plan. Well, so you'll have different vehicles. You won't necessarily own them all.
Yeah.
But you'll have use for them all. So it'll be a choice. And notice that's exactly what makes automobiles so good right now. It gives us choice. You know, I can go where I want, stop off when I want, and come back when I want. And that's something that we as nomadic human beings just absolutely thrive on.
Sure.
And I can't do that. I cannot do that very well with public transit.
No.
It needs personal mobility. And that's one reason why when I read books like one by Larry Burns and the like, some of the books you read celebrate the death of the automobile. Oh, before long, we'll all take public transit. We won't need a car. A car is a filthy thing.
It's not going to happen.
No, that's not going to happen. Not as long as people remain people and want to visit other people and want to have adventures and want to be as we are, nomadic beings. So we'll still, and of course, we'll still have, one hopes, these old Crocs that we all savor and enjoy. You know, I have it's not that old, but it will be in 2050. I have a 1965, 7, I'm forgetting the year, 5. Morgan plus four family tour, that car will still be around in 2050.
Sure.
I won't be, but the car will be, and you know, the next owner will use it occasionally, like an ice cream car. He'll enjoy it, and yeah, and that car will still be running. Sure.
Well, Dennis, thank you very much for sitting down with us and taking the time. It's been fascinating.
Well, it's good fun. It's good fun. Thank you.
And now, stay tuned for an outtake from our interview with Dennis.
My favorite story concerning that concerns Ayrton Senna in Japan Grand Prix a long time ago. And a journalist asked him a question at the post-pole press conference. The journalist said, well, how is it you sit there looking at the television screen in your car, you know, the little box they put there, during practice, and you watch it, and then with 5 minutes to go, you go out and run a fastest lap? What do you do? What goes on in your head? And Senna thought for about 15 seconds, which is a long time to think about an answer.
Yeah.
And then he came out with, to me, the most articulate view about concentration that I've ever heard. He said, I concentrate and I get myself in a state where part of my mind sees the task before me, this corner, but part of my mind sees the next corner as it should be. And when I get to the next corner, I have already seen it and I've already understood it. If it's different from what I expect, if a car has slid in front of me, then I know what I can do. If it is as I expect, I'm ready for it, and my part of my mind is on that third corner already. And that he does that, I thought of a name, I couldn't call it anything else I could think of, but precognition, not in the sense of fortune telling, but in the sense of knowing what's coming. And I thought about it for a while, and my tiny little addition to all this is I learned, and I believe, it's the same thing anyone who does repetitive tasks can do. And it's what dancers do, mm-hmm. You know, ballet. It's what actors do. It's what any one of us does when we are redoing something we know really well. And the best example I give for, and I wrote about this, was think about, for example, a song that you really know, or think about a prayer that you know, that you say every day, and get yourself in a quiet place and think, say it to yourself, and say it to yourself and really think hard on it to get other stuff out, and it's going to work. You're going to hear the next line or know the next line is here, and that it eases the current line because the next line is already done. And the amazing thing is these guys do that in the cacophony of a race car.
Right.
And they do it for an hour and a half or 2 hours.
Yep.
It's absolutely brilliant that they do that. And he was the only driver I've ever heard describe it so well. The other guys sort of, you know, I don't know, they don't drive with their heads. Or if they do, they cannot articulate it as well.
Exactly. They just can't articulate it.
But it was so good, this idea of, you know, doing the same thing that dancers do and actors do, and any one of us can do, but certainly not in the limit of driving a race car. The guy was amazing.
This concludes our interview with Dennis Simonitis. Thanks again to Dennis, and a special thanks to Road and Track Magazine for letting Dennis take the time to sit down and talk with us. And thanks also to the band Rasputina for letting us use music from their album Cabin Fever. You can find out more about Rasputina at www.rasputina.com. If you've missed any of the previous episodes of our interview with Dennis Simonitis, you can find them on www.euroautotraining.com or on iTunes.